7 p.m. Eastern Wartime. Bob Trout reporting. The Japanese have accepted our terms fully. That's the word we've just received from the White House in Washington. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
CBS's Robert Trout making the announcement on radio, the most compelling medium of the era. I'm Sam Litzinger. The thoughts of those old enough to remember that day return to it now on this, the 60th anniversary of the war's end. Those of us who were born after World War II can only imagine the emotions of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, joy that it was over, sadness for those who died never knowing if it would be over, concern about what would happen next now that it was over. But on this day, 60 years ago, there was a sense, even if only a quiet pride among the warriors, that something magnificent had been accomplished, despite so much horror. The last good war, some call World War II. Wars now are different. Our food and gasoline aren't rationed. We aren't buying war bonds. Even the way wars are reported to us has changed in ways the correspondents in World War II couldn't have imagined. One of those reporters is Richard C. Hottollett. He's a retired CBS News correspondent and was a member of Edward R. Murrow's original team of correspondents covering World War II. He currently lectures at the George Washington University. Here's his commentary on this historic day.
The 60th anniversary of victory in World War II was observed with nostalgia, something the conflict in Iraq is not likely ever to evoke. The Second World War was forced upon the West. It was a defensive war, and it roused people to mobilize all their resources. Iraq has been an intervention not of necessity but of choice. Its origin and purposes are suspect. Its course has been bloody and erratic, and its outcome, both short-term and long, is a matter of great concern. From 1939 to 1945, the American people knew what was going on. Reporters covering U.S. forces enjoyed conditions which were often uncertain and hazardous, but professionally close to ideal. Shortly before D-Day, General Dwight Eisenhower ordered his commanders to allow accredited correspondents, quote, to talk freely with officers and enlisted personnel and to see the machinery of war in operation in order to visualize and transmit to the public the conditions under which men from their countries are waging war against the enemy.
This is Richard C. Hottollett speaking from London. The Allied forces landed in France early this morning. I watched the first landing barges hit the beach exactly on the minute of H hour. I was in a 9th Air Force Marauder flying at 4,500 feet along 20 miles of the invasion coast.
Military censorship was inevitable, but it was fussy, not crippling. The U.S. First Army press camp at Spa in eastern Belgium provided a dozen or so correspondents with jeeps and drivers 24 hours a day, no questions asked. Press Wireless was there as a commercial radio link to CBS News in New York, subject to all kinds of interruptions, sunspots, and so-called atmospherics. It was the Bronze Age of communication. The Germans had magnetic tape. We had an almost comically rudimentary wire recorder. No matter, New York did not especially want recordings. The networks apparently thought that recording might undermine their webs. The press camp had a pretty useless G2 briefing weekdays. On one supposedly quiet Sunday morning, I drove east to 4th Division headquarters in the Hürtgen Forest and was welcomed with some surprise. Did I know that German paratroopers had come down in the area the night before? An obviously big attack was underway not far to the south. Back to Spa in a lather, where Press Wireless could not raise New York but did contact London, I reported the beginning of what turned out to be the Battle of the Bulge. We tried the wire recorder one last time the following March for the great airborne crossing of the Rhine, but whatever was on the wire was lost, together with the recorder, when our plane was shot down. I made my way to 9th U.S. Army headquarters to broadcast the story. Our reports were necessarily sparse, but they met a real need and were warmly appreciated. An eager audience was waiting to hear how husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, and sisters were faring. Occasionally, the reports were eloquent. No one who heard them would forget the broadcasts of Edward R. Murrow any more than the incomparable word pictures of Ernie Pyle, the columnist.
Permit me to tell you what you would have seen and heard had you been with me on Thursday. It will not be pleasant listening. If you're at lunch, or if you have no appetite to hear what Germans have done, now is a good time to switch off the radio. For I propose to tell you of Buchenwald, is on a small hill about 4 miles outside Weimar. And it was one of the largest concentration camps in Germany. And it was built to last.
But in the main, professional competence was the hallmark, and broadcasters had a special edge, telling people directly what was happening. Murrow had not hired his crew as trombone-voiced radio personalities. He wanted reporters, and all the men in London had learned the trade at United Press, a pretty hard school. The geography of the European war made it easier to explain. There was, as a rule, a discernible line between us and them. The signposts were reasonably reliable. That and much else has radically changed. The last neat war was in the Persian Gulf in 1991. Communication technology is light years beyond the 1940s and Korea. Almost instant voice and picture contact is now the norm. Armies of reporters serve multifarious media in an unbroken 24-hour news cycle. The mask of battle is no longer the steel helmet of past millenniums. That began to change in Vietnam. Iraq is marked by the grotesque figure of the suicide bomber, unrecognizable and everywhere. The political background to it all, constantly changing, is a game whose goals and players are largely mysterious. Today's Iraq War reporters, venturing out of specially secure strongholds, can well be in the grip of a nervous tension that their colleagues of the 1940s may have felt only in the scariest moments. And their output is seldom gratefully received, but too often kicked around in political football. They deserve recognition, admiration, and sympathy.
Commentary from Richard C. Hottlett, last of the Murrow Boys, those correspondents who drew the blueprint for broadcast journalism. The others, Charles Collingwood, Larry Lesueur, Cecil Brown, Winston Burdett, William Downs, Thomas Grandin, Eric Severide, Howard K. Smith, William Shirer, Mary Marvin Breckinridge, the Murrow boy who was a girl, and of course Edward R. Murrow himself. In addition to giving rightful honors to the warriors, the 60th anniversary of the end of the Second World War is a good day to remember their contributions, too. They told us as quickly, fairly, and accurately as they could what was going on in a time of chaos. No small accomplishment.
Now, during this broadcast period, we shall hear the latest word direct from the two key cities of London and Berlin as our CBS representatives speak to us across the ocean by shortwave radio. First in London, waiting to speak to us now, is the chief of Columbia's European staff, Mr. Edward R. Murrow. And to hear Mr. Murrow, we switch you now to London.
This is London. Europe is all paradox these days. For instance, one of the few places in Europe.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast. Tonight, here in Berlin, we should have a decision whether it's to be peace or war.
Now the news from the British capital, reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London.
Britain this morning had its answer from Tokyo.
This is London. I am speaking from a crowded air raid shelter, 2 floors underground. This morning, large forces of German bombers are continuing their unprecedented attempt to bomb England.
Here is a recording made by CBS correspondent Richard C. Hottlett inside the besieged city of Aachen.
The men of D Company, around here, one of our famous infantry divisions, have been in the town for 2 days or more.
God grant that in our pride of this hour, we may not forget the hard tasks that are still before us. That we may approach these with the same courage, zeal, and patience with which we faced the trials and problems of the past 4 years.